Charm of Favor, Chapter 25.
The low hills on his right looked black against the cool purple sky as Adnan stretched his legs against the floorboard of his Ford pickup truck. The loaded trailer attached to the frame hitch slowed him down on the hills of Interstate 65 south of the Tennessee border. Traffic was light, and the lack of any radio signals this far west of Huntsville made it difficult to stay alert. He had trained his entire life for this day. He took a deep breath and flexed his shoulders in recollection of that fact. It was Monday, but the folks at the Stennis Space Center wouldn't notice he was not in his cubicle chair for at least 4 more hours. By then, the news would be focused on something else. It was normally a 5-hour drive from Hattiesburg to Nashville, but the trailer made it unsafe to drive faster than 60, which was somewhat irritating to the Americans who liked to drive 10 to 15 miles an hour over the speed limit. Even the semis drove 75 miles an hour. There were no trucks with 18 wheels in Pakistan. There were few roads and no bridges that could support 80,000 pounds and a rig 13 feet high and nearly 80 feet long. America was such a beautiful country. The roads were smooth and well-lit. He was sure there was no place on earth with so much green, and yet it was well-managed, unlike the jungles of Asia that declared victory over mankind's ability to subdue it centuries ago. The industrial parks were not like the no-man's land, beaten into sterile dust by smoky trucks with no doors or brakes for that matter. Rather, they were manicured with flower beds and fountains, and the buildings were air-conditioned behind tinted glass. The people were courteous and considerate, and he was amazed at how many people had not locked their cars or houses in years, feeling safe in their neighborhoods. He could not recall a day of his youth without hearing gunfire in the distance, or men yelling at one another, or angry funeral mobs marching under an open coffin down the street, while chanting death to America, or Britain, or Saudi Arabia. Women in America tempted a man beyond any reasonable ability to resist staring or lusting. They freely showed their legs, their faces, and even their hair in public for any man to see. He was glad he was trained to become one with the landscape and to put one's own divine lust behind a gate of iron for the will of Allah. Other men had no such God-given mission. Like animals driven to breed or eat or fight, they did so without remorse as they carried the Allah escape clause with them wherever they went. Right now it was the will of Allah to bind the great Satan and make him stumble for his sins. He gripped the wheel with renewed commitment as he recalled the blessing laid upon him as he left Pakistan. You are the light-bringer. Where much is given, much is expected, and God has given you much. The merciful Allah has commanded you to strike the great Satan in his eyes, and you cannot be stopped, for God giveth no commandment, saveth he provideth a way to fulfill that commandment. Go, and sin not, lest God removeth this great honor from you, for many are called, and few are chosen. Said the imam as the mosque hummed with the low-grade chant of the men in his village. Nothing would stop him. Nothing could stop him. The Bradford pear and dogwood trees along the freeway were in full bloom as he climbed north toward Tennessee line. The air was still in the cloudless deep, dark blue above the low mountains. In a few hours there would be no sound in these cities, but people's voices and dogs barking. There would be no sirens. There would be no trucks or cars or rescue helicopters. He could feel the prayers of millions of faithful Muslims, strategically placed around the country by the Obama administration, waiting for him to deliver the sign in the heavens. The issuing chaos would be a small repayment for the crusaders who destroyed his country. America was young, but the ancestors of those crusaders sent their children here to rob God of his bounty. It seemed only right to take it back, by any means necessary. Jack, take this note to Kenor. Don't take those running shoes off yet. It's going to be a long night, said General Banks. Yes, General. I'll be back, Jimmy. I have to go to work now, said Jack, hugging him again. The Marine guarding the door was already punching the access code into the lock when she approached. Careful out there, ma'am, said the Marine. Leave the porch light on, said Jack, as she slipped through the door into the dimly lit gray airlock. The door clicked loudly behind her, the lights flashed, and the Marine inside the outer door pulled the lever to let it open to the hallway of the Pentagon. He nodded to her as she leaped into the lighted hallway. There was no sense of night or day in the great hallways of the Pentagon. From the E-ring to the A-ring and all the stories, the lights never went out. Only the offices had windows, and only A-ring and E-ring actually had a view to the outside. The inside ring faced a cloister of nature, with the exception of the Taco Bell located at the very center of the large courtyard. It was kept safe by the 70-foot surrounding walls of the most recognized military building in the world. On one side of that inner ring was the view from Kenor's office. She took a different route this time, climbing the stairs and going over a section of the hallway, before descending again, taking long strides across the buffed tile floor to the narrow hallway leading to Kenor's little complex. She found it strange, even in this visit, that the outer door always remained open and the desk in the tiny lobby was always empty. "Come in, Jack. I've been expecting you," said the deep voice from inside the office. "I have a note from General Banks, sir," said Jack as she rolled to the right into his office. "Have a seat, Jack. Let's see what you have," said Raymond, holding out his large hand to pick the folded note from her fingers. "My family's here," said Jack nervously. "Yes, Jack. They will be safe here," said Raymond, reading the note for a few seconds. Jack looked around the simple room again. There were no pictures on the walls, no models or awards on the shelves. The tiny complex was quiet, like a doctor's office. "I feel safe, I guess," said Jack, trying to fill the few seconds of silence. "Go close the lobby door, quickly now," said Raymond, leaning forward in his chair. Jack sprung to her feet and stepped quickly to the wooden door that was much heavier than it looked. She moved it closed and spun the deadlock. She dodged around the empty desk and returned to Raymond's office. "That one too," said Raymond, waving his finger at the door. "Yes, sir," said Jack, doing the same thing with her on the inside, with him. He placed the receiver against his ear and pressed one button on the phone's screen. Jack sat down again in the large leather chair in front of his desk. "I need to speak to him now. Please," said Raymond. He swiveled his oversized chair to face Jack, and his soft, light blue eyes met hers. She could feel the fear in him now. "Mr. President, we believe the target city is Nashville. We are certain the device is on its way." "Ours, Mr. President. We need your authorization to do what is necessary." "Why, Mr. President?" "We don't normally do why, but I would say it has something to do with you keeping your promises." "No, sir. They certainly are not accustomed to that. I know this type of action has never been done before on American soil, but this device must be stopped at any cost," said Raymond, blinking only once while he was engaged with the president. "There are always those risks in war." "Those rules were written long before the foundation of this world, Mr. President." "Thank you, Mr. President," said Raymond, again pausing while lines in his face changed to a softer configuration, "for not making this about your legacy. You're a good man. We're not done yet, Mr. President." "Good night, sir," said Raymond, softly placing the receiver back in its cradle. "Jack, return only to General Banks. Tell her, Foxtrot 247. Repeat that back to me," said Raymond, still not breaking his gaze with hers.
Foxtrot 247.
Yes, sir, said Jack, trying to stand without success. Her legs would not listen. Her heart was beating like she was standing barefoot on the combat floor, and her hands were folded together like she was trying to break walnuts between them. She didn't think it was possible, but he was somehow holding her in that seat.
This is your mission, Jack.
A child you are no more. Remember who you are. Do not stop until you have delivered this message, said Raymond. When he blinked, the muscles in her legs flexed at her command, and she rose off the chair and moved for the door. She unlocked the bolt and looked over her shoulder at Mr. Kenor. He was standing behind his desk, but he seemed taller than before. She could feel his strength going with her. She pulled the door and walked into the lobby. She reached the outer door within seconds and paused as though she was about to walk into space. She took a deep breath, and the face of her sensei popped into her mind, like she was about to go into the final contest of that match. "Hell hath no fury," she would say before Jack left the wooden floor of the gym and stepped onto the shock-absorbing mat of competition. She set her jaw, pulled the heavy door open, and stepped into the narrow hallway that led into the main hall. She moved her weight to the balls of her feet and decided to take a new route. She turned right instead of left. She looked for the stairs on the side of the hall and started to walk fast. The cool air felt like a breeze on her moist cheeks as she crossed the hall diagonally and hugged the left side. As she rounded the first angle of the short inner ring hallways, she leaned a little to pick up the speed. Suddenly, she realized something she had not felt before in this building. She was alone. Her eyes flashed across the ceiling from side to side, looking for cameras. She could not see any, but she could feel her image being watched by someone or something. The red sign marking the stairs was just ahead, and she picked up her speed to a jog. No one was there to get excited, so she leaped like she was in Meridian Park, floating from foot to foot in jet-like strides, so the momentum would lift her up like she was flying. She locked her eyes on the stainless steel handle and grabbed it like it was the last handhold before drifting out into space. She pulled the door open and headed up the stairs like a gazelle. She went up two floors and burst into the hallway at the last second, hoping that her actions were making it impossible for any surveillance intelligence to predict what she was going to do next. She turned right out of the hallway and again launched quickly around the ring of the Pentagon to the next corridor leading to the outer rings. She only had to go two rings, but it was like the entire building had been suddenly abandoned. She was running now, using her long legs to reach out and pull the shiny tiled floor under her feet. She felt light on her feet as the ecstasy of running track events flowed through her body. She leaned out wide to take the corner into the corridor at top speed. She banked hard and opened her hands as she moved her arms with her legs to gain more speed. The arm felt like a low-hanging tree limb as it met her in the chest and caused her legs to fly forward. She nearly landed on her shoulder blades as she hit the tile and slid for 20 feet. She felt her eyes were rolling around in her skull when she came to a rest. She felt a sharp pain in the base of her neck, but she instinctively rolled to her knees and then to her feet. In her mind, she felt like she bounced up quickly. During one of her first full contact matches, she had received a massive roundhouse kick to the side of her face. She knew that roar in her head all too well. It was time to fight. She wiped the blood from her nose and looked at her hand. She rose up on the balls of her feet and wiped her long hair out of her face with her other hand. Two men dressed in black jumpsuits, very similar to the one worn by Mr. Larson, advanced on her quickly. She looked for weapons, but she didn't see any as she moved backward, bouncing on her feet, breathing, recovering. She stayed to one side of the hallway, not allowing them to flank her. She looked for cracks in her enemies. The first man was dark, but not black. His hair was definitely military and cut, but there were no insignia on his jumpsuits. Boots. That will leave a mark.
but it will make his feet slow, she thought to herself. She had fought boys before. They were faster and stronger, but they also never expected her to kick like a mule. The man on her right moved for her first, reaching for her neck. She grabbed his right hand, spun her body hard, easily breaking his wrist, and she pulled him forward with his own weight to the tile floor. She leaped and kicked hard into the back of his ribs, breaking two of them. He wasn't getting up. She felt her hair pull her head around as the second man took advantage of her position and landed a fist against the right side of her face. The punch was off target and landed only on her cheek. It hurt like hell, but she was conscious as she elbowed him in the eye socket and rolled away from him and onto her feet again. Her face throbbed with the swelling already happening, and she could see her cheek already crowding her vision. If she didn't act quickly, she could be defending herself by circling to the left. She began to panic as she realized that whoever was watching those hallways knew one man was already down, and that they would need reinforcements. This had to end now. He swung his right hand and missed. His left came straight at her, making it an easy target for her to slip, and she stepped hard into his left kneecap. It was indefensible. His knee crumpled as she spun quickly on the ball of her foot while holding onto his left elbow. Her right foot split his ear in half as she hyperextended his elbow. He wasn't as quiet as the first man as he hit the floor with his eyes closed, bleeding heavily on the floor. She turned and ran for the next hallway down the corridor, propelled by the adrenaline in her system, and cautious not to crash. She forced her mind to focus and to breathe deeply and consciously to get oxygen back into her system. The feeling that round two was about to begin was not misplaced. She turned hard, running as hard as she could, but the hallways in C-ring were longer than those in the inner rings. She was two floors up and more than 200 yards from her destination, and she could feel it now. She could see it in her mind, but she refocused on the moment. There was nothing but the moment. Your opponent will wander, but you must not. He will distract you with complacency or a feint, but never take your eyes off his weapons. He can't hurt you with his smile. The red sign for the stairs was 50 yards away. She felt a wave of panic, like she had gone walking in the forest by herself without telling anyone. She felt suddenly alone and small. She heard a squeak behind her, and she glanced over her shoulder to see two more men chasing her. They weren't getting any closer at this speed, but she had to open the door to the stairs, which might give them enough time to catch her. If she passed the stairs, she would have to run around the next blind corner, and then it would be another 50 yards to the next set of stairs. "I'm doing it," she said to herself, focusing on the stainless steel handle. With a flick of her thumb, she had the door open and yanked herself inside. She leaped to the landing below without touching a step as the door hardware rattled in the hands of the two men in black jumpsuits running after her. Her back hit the wall hard, but her lean body bounced off and she leaped to the next landing. The men negotiated 3 steps and began jumping in the same way she was. It was strange how invincible and painless you feel when adrenaline is pumping by the tablespoons into your body. There is no way those guys are feeling what I'm feeling, she thought to herself. She hit the wall again, and again she bounced off and grabbed the stair railing, leaping to the landing below. One more. Please, God, let me reach one more, she said to herself, now breathing hard. She could feel tears of fear welling up in her eyes, and she wanted to scream for help. But she was afraid the wrong people would hear. The first man reached her as she bounced off the wall, and they tumbled down the concrete steps to the landing below. They grappled, and she punched him as hard as she could and broke his chokehold the way she had been trained. But then he had been trained as well, and he wrapped her right leg between his and held her while the second man reached them. He drew back his boot to kick her in the face, but she raised her other foot and connected hard with his groin. She used the only 1 or 2 seconds she had left to plunge her fingers into the eyes of the man holding her. He growled as he released her, and she gained her balance as quickly as she could. She grabbed the door and tried to walk through it, but the boot struck her in the small of her back, and she fell forward into the hallway. She still had 100 yards to go to reach the next corner, and then the long wait for the vault doorway. She was breathing hard, and the taste of blood made her want to vomit. She spat to the side and used both hands to move her hair out of her eyes. She wanted to see this coming. The two men stood between her and the next turn before the vault door. One was still doubled over, and the other one was still wiping the tears out of his reddened eyes. Together, they weighed nearly 400 pounds. She doubted she weighed much more than 130 pounds, and she could not fight them off again. She rubbed her swollen cheek with her right hand and put her tongue against the inside to check for loosened teeth. The pain was beginning to come through the foggy roar in her head. She breathed in deeply and slowly through her nose and out through her mouth like she was in the match of her life. She looked behind her for more men, but they were not there. Everyone had been called away. There would be no witnesses to what was about to happen. She could run, but Raymond Knorr's message would not get through. She knew she could outrun them, but she could not tell what was around the next corner, or the next. So she flexed her fingers and balled them into hard fists. She stopped rocking from foot to foot and brought her hands up to the fighting position and stared at the men in black jumpsuits. She needed one of them to move first. She couldn't take them both. She wasn't ready for it. But somehow she unwrapped the fingers of her left fist and waved the men to bring it. Infuriated, the man she had poked in the eyes yelled out and began to run toward her. The second man, by some miracle, hesitated, and then began to follow his lead a little slower. She waited until the last possible moment and sprinted forward to the first man. It was like watching one of her fight films when she stepped to the right at the last second. It was too late for him, as his 200-pound frame could not adjust as easily as hers. She used his weight to pull her with him as she mounted his back with both knees below his shoulder blades and her hands gripping his collar. He lost his balance as he tried to turn, and just past her training, she leaned back with all her strength, bringing his face hard into the tile. She felt his spine snap with the momentum of her knees on either side of it, and he went completely limp. He did not take another breath. It was then that the second man reached her, side-kicking her in the back of the head. She flew forward onto the tile, barely able to get her hands in front of her. The roar was echoing now as the lights went dim. She rolled over just in time to see the fist raised above her face. She didn't feel a thing as the door opened to the back of her house. There was no one in the kitchen, but she smelled something cooking. Cookies. Or maybe it was cake. What time was it? She went to the sink and tried to run cold water into a glass. Through a dream, she felt the pain on the side of her face, but it was not hard like a fist. Voices. There was a man's voice. It was familiar. "Jack. Jack, open your eyes, Jack," said Mr. Larson, tapping the flat of his hand against her cheeks. She opened her eyes to the white glare of the LED lights on the ceiling. She blinked hard and coughed, feeling the pain in her ribcage. "Where am I?" she said roughly. "She's awake," said Mr. Larson, but it sounded like it was halfway down a long hallway. "Mr. Larson?" she asked finally, feeling the swollen side of her tongue with the words. "Yes, ma'am. You're okay. You're okay now. You're safe. I would let you rest, but I need you to tell me what Mr. Knorr told you." "What did he say to you?" asked Mr. Larson. "He said..." "Wait. General Banks. Where is General Banks?" asked Jack, slowly gaining her senses. "Damn, there's a soldier." "General Banks," yelled Mr. Larson toward the cubicle complex outside of Rocky's office. "Oh my God, Jackie, are you all right?" said James, running into the office. "Did I get him?" asked Jack, trying to sit up. "Don't sit up yet. Just lay there for a bit. Anybody got some ice?" When you get some ice on that lump on the side of her face, said James. Hold on. I have first aid. Coming through, people, coming through, said Rocky, lugging a long, square, black duffel bag. Someone grab General Banks. We're running out of time here, said Mr. Larson. The Marine at the door quickly left on the errand. The three men looked back at Jack, and James took up her right hand. Ouch! Son of a bitch, that hurts, said Jack. Hold on, Jackie. I think you broke a finger, or two, said James. Well, what does the other guy look like? Damn, I thought he had me, asked Jack. Yeah, well, thanks to Agent Larson here, that guy won't be bothering you anymore, said James. What happened? He had me, said Jack. You were late. I went walking. You never saw it coming. You did good, Miss Rousseau, said Mr. Larson, leaning lower to look her in the eyes. I'm here. How's you were, gentlemen? How is she? For God's sake, who the hell let her out by herself anyway? Said the general. You did. Well, Mr. Knorr did, said Jack. Oh, yeah, that's right, I did. I was checking on another encounter. Knorr sent a decoy, another route, four men. They're all dead. Guess he figured you were fast enough or harmless enough that you could get through, said the general. She got through, but barely, said Rocky, putting an ice pack on her cheek and cleaning the blood off her forehead with a packaged wipe. I have a message for you from Mr. Knorr, said Jack. As you were, people, don't go anywhere. Close that door. That's an order. What's the message, Jack?